you may have seen is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life. Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits, but there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit, because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen.
Today I'm talking with Rob Trevelyan. This is more of a you've definitely seen instead of you may have seen. Rob's the guy. He's the man. We've worked together so many times over the years. At first, I thought it was a curse. I'm like, I can't get away from this guy. He's on every job that I'm on. What the hell? So I just caved and became his friend. I think it was a smart move. We talk Ozark, The Accountant, East Coast, West Coast, family. And we barely get to scratch the surface. We could have talked for hours. But here's what we've got.
Fucking, I don't know, did you bring any jokes or anything like that?
You're doing that shit to me already.
So, Rob Trevelyan, where may we have seen you?
Oh, you're going to ask me that right away.
Right away.
Okay. Well, right away. At the moment, I'm on Ozark. It's a show on Netflix.
Right.
And we are going into our third season.
Right.
We're getting ready to start shoot that in a few weeks.
Yes.
And prior to that, I worked on a feature film called The Accountant.
Yes.
Starring Ben Affleck.
Yes.
And prior to that, I've been in about 100 other different shows.
See, now you're just bragging right off the bat.
No, I'm not bragging. You asked me what I've seen.
Who are you on Ozark for their benefit?
I play Sheriff John Nix.
Sheriff Nix, so. Right. One of the few... I'm not going to give away any spoilers. People aren't caught up. And then in...
I'm alive.
There you go.
After season
there
two.
There you go.
That's not
there
a spoiler because season two's out. So right. I lived through that season and we know we're doing a third. We
right.
We do some more.
Right.
We'll see if I live through the third.
Yes.
You're always in peril on, on Ozark. It was... Banshee was another show that I recurred on for a few years and... Nobody knew when they were going to die at any moment. And it didn't matter if you were a series regular or a guest star like I was,
right.
You know, a recurring guest star. It didn't matter. You could die at any moment.
And
it was interesting.
So interesting. Well, what's interesting that the parallel between those two shows is that there's no redeeming person in either one. Like,
yeah.
I don't know who the hell you're supposed to be rooting for. But Ozark is just so... Like, Ozark makes me uncomfortable... But I can't look away. Where Banshee made me uncomfortable, and I wanted to turn it off.
Yeah, Banshee.
Yeah.
Well, the concept with that show for me, it was pulpy. You know,
yeah, it was gratuitous.
And then it was, you know, yeah, it kind of went that way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it ran its course. Every show runs its course. It's hard. It was good the first season. I mean, I thought it was really good the first season, but boy, it's hard to keep that going, especially
right.
in television episodic. Land to keep it fresh and keep it going. So any show that lasts 5, 6, 7 years, it's incredible that those people can do that. I mean, it's really
right?
a hat off thing for those folks.
For the writers.
Yeah. Writers, showrunners,
right.
the actors in the shows, everything.
Yeah.
Everything. But yeah, the writers for sure. So we're fortunate to have really good writers on Ozark.
And who were you in The Accountant? Again?
I played Ben Affleck's father in a series of flashbacks. There was a young version of him that I trained to be like the world's best assassin.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just say you've had a crap ton of success, all things considered, throughout your career.
I think I've been pretty fortunate.
You've been really, really fortunate.
To work with the people I've worked with
and yeah.
to get the stuff I've gotten
right.
in this market, in
right.
the Southeast primarily. So,
and I mean, do you feel like you're having some of your greatest success now?
I feel like I'm better than I've ever been. You know, you do this long enough
right.
and there's a comfort level. And,
yeah.
And so you don't handcuff yourself. I don't handcuff myself as much as I used to. I know in retrospect I did as far as creatively because you get on set and there's protocol. And, you know, do I want to try this? Can I, you know, is it okay for me to try this? And I don't give a shit anymore.
Okay.
And I just, right. I will go and, You know, you'll have your baseline choices, right. And then I'm ready to play. And that's what they like. They do like that. I mean, constantly you have a director, when you get to a certain point in the scene, where he's got what he wants.
Right.
And then he says, okay, do whatever you want. And that's happened a lot more in the last few years. So there's a trust there with them as well.
Right.
And I think it's just, I don't know, owning it. You know, I own it. I don't get intimidated or starstruck or anything. Yeah. You know, about the only person I've been starstruck by was Roger Deakins, who is a director of photography, probably one of the best DPs on earth.
Okay.
He has shot everything.
What did he do? That you worked on?
Prisoners. It was a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal that I did in Atlanta, you know, thriller thing, Hugh Jackman, Jake.
Yep.
And he was the DP on that.
Okay.
And I'm just a huge fan of his work. And first Dan said, I was like, I think you are the best DP I've ever seen. And he got so embarrassed, he couldn't even talk. I watched this guy just red, you know? Right. And I was like, sorry. So he's very shy. But, you know, it was like, I get to work with Roger Deakins. Yeah, I was so psyched. You know, I was so excited about that. But, you know, one actor to another, it's just, we're just trying to do the craft. So it doesn't really matter who it is.
Sure.
You know, you just want to play.
And you've always been a really confident guy. I mean, whether that's just part of your bit or whatever, or you really are that way. I mean, you've always been, you know, had that kind of cockiness, confidence. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that you're not starstruck. But didn't you get a little geeked out when you worked with Eastwood?
I just wanted to work with him, you know, and then when he came on set, that was on Sully.
Yeah.
When we did Sully. And then when he came on set, he was so chill. He reminded me of my dad a lot, way he looked and the way he moved and everything. He reminded me of my father at the same age. And you know, everybody had said, stay away from Clint. There was a sheet that all the actors got, you know, like the day players, like I was on that film. And it said, you know, don't talk to him, don't approach him, don't get pictures, leave him alone. He's an old guy, you know, he's like 78 when he's shooting this. He's got to do his work.
He scares easily.
Leave him alone. And so it's like, okay. And so I did, and I was just sitting on the set in between takes. Mm-hmm. And he just plopped down in the chair next to me. And, you know, I was the air traffic control tower supervisor.
Right.
And so he was like, what is that gauge right there? And I was like, I think that's the anal pressure of the assistant director. I don't know, Clint. I don't know what it is. I said, I've never said, I don't know what that is. I'm an actor. And he's like, oh, really? You're not one of the real guys? I was like, no. I was like, you cast me in this role? He's like, oh, that's right. I'm so sorry. And then he started talking to me. And we talked about flying. We talked about women. Mm-hmm. And we talked about a lot of stuff. And then he invited me to have lunch with him. And I did. I sat with him at lunch. And then at the end of the day, I went up to him. I said, okay, boss, you know, we've worked together now. I want a picture. And he was like, absolutely. He goes, don't worry about it.
Right.
So I got mine, and it opened the floodgates. Everybody bum rushed him. So then the AD jumps right in. He's like, get away from Cliff. Go away. Get out of here. You know, but I got mine.
There you go. It was good. It hasn't always been like that, though, for you. I mean, like when you started, when this first started, because you do, and I've talked about this in other interviews with like Rebecca and Tim and Dave Hager, you know, the old crew.
The old guy.
You were pretty much here for almost for the conception of it.
So I came in after the Earl Owensby era, which is when all those people cut their teeth. Mm-hmm. Some of them went on to LA, like Leon Rippey, guys like that.
Right.
And so I was like the next wave that came in. And at the time, I was theater, you know,
and I
hooked on with Charlotte Repertory Theater before I started getting film work,
right?
And then I started to get little roles here and there, you know, Matlock,
right?
You know,
I looked you up, like I know that you had done Matlock, and you had done. They got you listed for 5 episodes, and you're like 5 different people.
I know. That was the day, you know, during that time, there weren't as many actors to pull from in the 70s, and so when they were casting locally, if they liked you,
yeah.
They didn't care. I died twice. You know, I mean, in fact, there was an episode, and I can't remember the producer's name, Peter somebody, but great guy, dude, L.A. guy, but he lived here during the production of Matlock.
Yep.
And I did this one episode, played an FBI agent, and I was murdered on the episode. And they called me back, and they were like, you know, we want him to be this guy, you know, as another guest star on another episode. And it was going to air like 2 episodes after the one that I died. And I brought that up to Peter. I was like, you know, I'm kind of prominent on that episode, and I die. And he goes, nobody notices. Doesn't matter. It's all good. You're not in a uniform in this one. So, and I'm like, oh, that makes sense. So I'm not in a uniform. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's
true,
funny.
True meat puppets back then.
So you were able to play multiple characters in the same season of a show.
Yeah.
That's crazy, because now that's unheard of.
There was only one season where I did two episodes. The others were other seasons, you know. But yeah, that one season, I was in two different episodes and died in the first one.
Now, you just listened to the intro of the podcast and how I basically set it up. Now, again, looking at your stuff, like, you've never really been, you know, guy with phone, and you've never been, like, man on the street too much. Like, you've got a lot of Dan, Dr. Romero, Murph, Mr. You've had a lot of names.
Everything, just about,
No, I've what, been... I mean, how the hell did that happen? How did you get off?
I don't know. I don't know.
I do. I mean, you do have one, like Radioland Murders. Your cop number 13.
Well, and that was one of the early ones.
13.
That was one of the early ones I did as well. And I don't know. You know, when I was fantastic. Reading for stuff, the whole time I've been doing this.
Yep.
If a role comes up and it's, you know, man number two, I'd be like, can I read for Bill instead? Just because, you know, Bill has a name,
right?
You know, and that was a choice that I made.
Yeah.
And the thing with Radioland Murders was I didn't want, you know, cop number 13 had like a line, two lines, whatever it was back then. But, you know, they said he's going to work for 3 weeks,
there
4 weeks. So I was like, I don't care.
Yep.
I used to call that Parati work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Tim Parati is famous. You know, he's got such a great look that he's famous for getting cast in something, and he's there for half the year. You know, and he sneezes on film. You know, that's it. It's like, you don't really have a line, but we need you to sneeze here. You know, and we'll pay you for 6 months. And he gets that stuff.
When he and I were still roommates, and he did Andersonville, that miniseries, and he was on it for 3 months.
Yeah.
And he comes back, and I was like, so, you know, and I'm asking him all these questions. And I'm like, so, you know, what were you? He's like, well, he's like, I actually only had three lines in the script. He's like, I said two. He said one got in. He was there for 3 months.
Well, anyway, you know, the good thing, I think, with those roles you're referring to is most of the time they were a little more substantive than you know, the regular stuff.
And right.
Pretty early on, I was lucky, because pretty early on I would read for something and they would go, read for this.
Yeah.
And it was generally a little larger role that they wanted to cast out of L.A., but they had me here and they would save that money.
Yeah.
And I did that, like, I made a living off of that for a number of years, where I knew I was, they told me, they said, you took this from a guy in LA.
Now,
and it was just cost consciousness on their part.
You remember, again, as well as I do, and a lot of the guys that we know were more like the Tim Paratis and the Dave Hagers, who had more of a character look and much more of a rural look, and you fell into more of a leading man type.
Yeah.
And were there less of you? Do you think that's why that may have helped you in some way? Or
I don't know. Maybe less of me that could speak.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, let's not take away the, I mean, you are good at what you do. I'm not taking that away from you. But I'm just wondering, like, were there more of those guys and less of you, so that when those things did come up and they're like, hey, we want you to read for.
Yeah. I don't know. Because I'm the everyman guy.
You know?
I mean, it's not, I don't know if I'm so much a lead. I have been, but I'm the everyman. But I've spent my whole career looking at all these character actors going, God, I would work all day if I looked like that. And then I could sit around and eat a block of cheese the size of a car battery and not care.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But I'm the everyman, so I have to stay in shape.
It's really been awful for you, I'm sure. It's really been terrible. So come on, be honest with me. You got into this business because you was a
I
good way
to get laid.
See? That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
It's a good way to get chicks.
Have you gotten that response ever?
I've never asked that question.
Haven't really?
I've never asked anyone that
college,
question.
College, I had to fulfill a requirement, okay? Had to fulfill a requirement. I mean, I did, you know, the talent show goof around stuff in high school and all that. And, you know, the high school plays and just, you know, just jerking off. But I don't know if I can say that on your podcast.
Yes, you can.
In any
say whatever the hell you want.
So college, you know, I had to fulfill a requirement. There were a couple of exceptional professors at Potsdam State University. You know, one had come from Juilliard and didn't like the runaround. The other one had come from England, like Royal Shakespeare on Avon. So highly qualified instructors.
Yep.
And they just got away. They went to upstate New York to a small college in a rural place.
Yep.
And I just happened to luck into that. But I took the acting classes and that I got bit by the bug.
Hmm.
And then they all came at me about doing productions up there. And that's when I was able to look at the theater company. And I'm like, okay, there's 40 women and one other straight guy. in this company. I was like,
I like my chances.
I am checking it. Had nothing to do with art. Had nothing to do with art. Nothing. I mean, really, truly.
Right.
Because, you know, all my friends in college were jocks. I was captain of the soccer team in college. You know, and so they're like, yeah, Rob, yeah. They just gave me so much grief about doing theater.
Right.
But then once they came to a play, you know, they're like, well, who's that girl? And I was like, well,
right.
I'm going out with her. You're not.
Yeah, I'm not telling you. I'm not telling you.
Yeah.
So you didn't go to school for theater, did you?
No, I was pre-law.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
I was pre-law and decided not to go to law school.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, you didn't go through like movement classes and dance classes.
I did.
And, did you?
I did. I did movement and dance.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. You know, once you have, there's a bunch of fine art requirements.
Yeah.
And for my degree. And, you know, once I got into that department, yeah, why not?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't, you know, ballet was a little weird for me.
That's.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture it, but I don't want to.
What, first position?
I don't want to picture you doing ballet. I don't want to picture that.
Yeah, it's kind of. It's like, why I don't go to yoga classes now, you know? I mean,
did you ever do a musical?
I did.
Did you?
I did a couple musicals, yeah.
Which ones did you do?
Annie, Get Your Gun. This is college.
Oh, in college.
Annie, Get Your Gun. We did A Christmas Carol. Charlotte Rep did, you know, a long time ago.
Sure.
But I don't sing.
Okay.
I don't sing. When I did, when I started to act,
yeah,
and I was doing theater before I did anything else.
Right.
I did a summer at the Lost Colony.
Yeah.
Oldest outdoor drama in America.
Yep.
Everybody sings. Everybody sings.
Everybody sings.
There's 120 actors in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only like 8 principal roles and then all these other little tiny roles. And then, you know, the whatever the rest of the body of the company is that they call.
You know,
like, I don't know what they are. Carrier pigeons. I don't know what they call them.
Okay.
You know, they just deliver messages.
Yep.
So they line everybody in the company up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And the music director's name was Roz. It's a lady that's been there for 1,000 years.
Okay.
And the theater on the Lost Colony is huge. 5,000 people, 4,500 people.
Damn.
Maybe that's overestimating. Maybe it's 2,500 people. But it's big.
Right.
And it's a big bowl. And she sits at the very top of the theater.
Wow.
And had everybody go through, you know, notes, sing different notes and stuff like that.
Yep.
All at one time. You like hit a C, you know, and somebody would do the note, and all of us, you know, we all did it, right? And after about 3 of those, she had a microphone up there, and she goes, "Okay, you in the red pants, don't sing." And I was like, I was the only one with red pants on, and I was like, "Okay, I'm not gonna sing." So I became an Indian, and I got to fight the whole time, which was awesome.
Nice.
I had a great time.
Nice,
yeah.
Red pants.
Sweatpants. It was early in the morning and I had sweats on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't wear red pants. I got tight pants.
I don't want to picture that either. Oh, Jesus. How have you managed to keep this together?
I don't know. I'm just really fortunate. You know, I think part of it is it's not real. You know, what we do is we get paid to pretend.
Right.
You know, and it's so subjective.
Right.
That I guess I'm not married to the result, maybe as much as a lot of people.
Right.
I love the process.
Yeah.
I mean, it's why I do it. I love this process so much, and I love working with the wildly creative people that we get to work with.
Right.
And being part of something that you can say, wow, you know, pretty good. You know?
Yeah.
And, or not. But, you know, for the most part, I love that process. But it's so subjective that we face rejection on a daily basis.
Right.
And I've just never been attached to it. If it's supposed to be mine, it's going to be mine.
Right.
There's, you know, it is just going
to
be mine.
You've talked to me about that before. Yeah.
And that's it. And I'm able to let it go. I guess I'm good at compartmentalizing. So I dump it as soon as it happens or not.
Has it always been like that for you? You've been able to do that
decision really quickly.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
My wife suffers it a lot more than I do. If I'm up for something really good and I don't get it, you know, it wrecks her day. And I'm like, you know, what's for dinner?
Wow.
I mean, I'll, you know.
Because this,
it's momentary. But
sure.
If it's supposed to be mine, I'm going to get it.
But I mean, we've talked about a lot of things over the years, but we've never gotten into some of the more truly like behind closed doors type of stuff. Like, I'm sure you've experienced it just like everybody else. Ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs. And I'm sure you have to have had moments where you're like, okay, I need something to happen soon.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, yeah. But I mean, for me, it's just like, okay, I'm ready to work. Universe, come on.
Okay.
I'm ready now. Now I'm ready. So let's do this. And generally it happens pretty quickly.
Wow. No one likes you.
So
no one likes you.
I'm universally despised.
Well, the people who need to like you, that make it worth your while. As long as they like you, I guess that's all that matters. And you've had like some pretty rewarding stuff pretty much throughout. Like I know you're, mm-hmm. you know, you're in a place right now where a lot of the hits that you're getting are really mm-hmm. fucking pretty badass, but you've had some others along the way. Like what's some of the stuff that you're most proud of that you can just, do you want to look at your IMDb page and take a look?
You know, I've been asked that a lot, and I've mm-hmm. been asked, you know, what is your favorite role that you've ever done?
Nah,
you know,
no,
people
no.
ask
Can't
me
do
that,
that
too. And I have never done my favorite role
yeah.
yet.
Right.
I haven't done it.
Right.
I mean, I've done a lot of, I like.
Right.
You know, but I can't say, you know, it's my favorite role of all time.
Right.
So that is yet to come, and I'm kind
sure.
of looking forward to that. The rewarding stuff comes in different ways. You know, working with Clint Eastwood
yeah.
was a bucket list thing for me.
Sure.
You know, I just wanted to work with that guy, you know. At some point,
yep.
I wanted to meet him and talk to him, and I was able to do that.
Yeah.
And...
Because
so,
we never know if that's ever going to happen.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Like when Robert Redford directed Conspirator,
right.
And I was able to be on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those jobs where, you know, I said like two lines and I was there a month.
Yeah.
However, I got to hang, you know, around them.
Right.
And so that was rewarding,
mm-hmm.
you know, for that reason. And then other ones that if you go through a process of self-discovery in
right.
any particular role, anything... that is cathartic, you know, that happens by accident, those are generally rewarding
mm-hmm.
as well. So, I don't know, you know, the ones that stand out are usually the most recent ones because
yeah,
it just
right.
seems like every experience, because I'm bringing the past experiences into it, every one is a little bit richer because
right.
I don't have to worry about a certain amount of things. I'm always going to learn something new
yep.
every show I do,
right.
and I'm always going to meet new people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all rewarding on a basis of just that it's new. It's
yeah.
new and fresh. And it's like, yeah. And that's kind of the gas I get from it. You know, that's kind
yeah.
of how I get jazzed from this, is that anything we do runs its course. Doesn't
right.
matter what it is.
Right.
But then the next thing comes, you know, and we're really fortunate as far as that goes. Because
yeah.
we don't go to the office and fill out the same form
no.
for 20 years. You know, we
right.
don't do that. You know.
Are there... things that you've stolen work-wise from people, and I mean that in a creative way
yeah.
where you've worked with people and you're like, I'm gonna use that,
yeah,
I'm gonna take that
yeah.
or oh my god, I never, I'm watching him, so I, you know, you realize that you're, oh my god, I can't take my eyes off this person, and you finish the job and you're like, I learned so much.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, have you ever had those moments?
Yeah, a couple times. You know, James McAvoy I think is great, and worked with him on Conspirator.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when we would wrap each day, after a certain amount of time, James McAvoy, myself, Danny Houston.
Oh, yeah.
And Colin Meaney,
mm-hmm.
who are all, they're just lunatics when they get offset. We would go to a bar and we'd have a pint, or I would have a pint and they'd have four, you know, in the same amount of time.
Right.
I was like, how can you go? Where's it going?
They're professionals.
You know, yeah, they're pros. And
yeah.
I just, so... But he did a couple of things that I've stolen, because it was just so honest, you know,
yeah.
a certain response in a certain situation that was like, wow, that worked. And, you know, when I tried it, I was like, it doesn't work for everybody. You can't,
sure.
you know, you can't
Again.
Just go, I'm going to do that, because
right.
then it'll, you'll look like you're doing
yep.
somebody doing something.
Right.
But the essentially what was behind it, you know, the
mm-hmm.
the impulse behind it,
yep.
I took, and I've used it. Before,
yeah, right?
I've definitely used it before, and I've done that with other stuff. You know,
mm-hmm.
just where you watch the way somebody processes something and make it work for you. Graham Smith is a stage actor who's
yep.
one of the best I've ever
yep.
known anywhere.
Yep,
and I learned a lot working with Graham.
Yeah,
and,
you had a chance
and,
to work.
You know,
with
you have
a
to
lot of times.
You have to make it translate to film. But
right.
it's about the craft and the process.
Yeah.
So anything that elevates the craft, or you know, will help me.
Yep.
Improve my craft.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
I will use it. I'll try to integrate it.
He came and saw 3 Days of Rain. You know, when I mm-hmm. did that a couple of years ago, and he hung out and you know came to talk to me after the show, whatever. And we were just walking back to the parking deck over at Spirit Square. So
mm-hmm.
it's like a, you know, it's a 2-minute walk. It took us a half an hour. because he started going into, like, same thing. I love Graham, and I'm so just blown away by how his brain works. But even still to this day, like, half of the stuff that he was talking about, I'm going, I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, what I learned from Graham, which was continuing education, and that was during the time I worked on with Charlotte Rep, you know, the equity house that is no more in Charlotte. He goes deep with every character, and it's not just his. It's all of them. It's all of them. And his research is so thorough. And during that time, I was trying to, you know, I found myself in a place where I was more process oriented than doing my process and then jumping into whatever it was, just letting
it
go.
Right.
And he helped me do that just because the volume of stuff in his head for a character or the piece itself, I could hang with him because it was an intellectual exercise. I was like, oh, I just want to see if I can hang with this guy intellectually. So, and we're friends. It's good. I can. But it got me to a point where I was like, you know what? I can get rid of it now. I mean, I can take all this information and now I can set it over here and we're going to see how it integrates into my work. And before that time, I couldn't separate the two. If I got into that process, if I got all into the intellectualizing, it would be going on in my head when I was working.
Yeah.
And through Graham and then just experience, you know, I learned to separate the two, and it helped my work a lot.
For everyone who's listening who is not familiar, once again, I am talking to one of my dearest friends, Rob Trevelyan, who you might have seen, might know from The Act, which is out now with
Patricia Arquette
on Hulu, The Gifted, Ozark, American Animals, MacGyver, The Accountant, Sully, House of Cards. We're going to run down the whole list, Rob, because this is where it gets a little crazy. And I like, for some people, they're like, holy crap, I've never realized. Halt and Catch Fire, Red Band Society, Banshee, Nashville, Drop Dead Diva, Killing Kennedy, Prisoners, A Way Back Home, Revolution as Scientist, The Bay, Coma?
Coma, remake of Coma.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a miniseries.
All right.
Yeah, it was fun.
The Conspirator, The Texas Cheerleader Scandal, Army Wives, The Mist.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
Yeah, Frank Darabont, I love him.
That was a big one. The Year Without a Santa Claus, the TV movie.
Yeah.
One Tree Hill, Surface, Elvis, Iron Jawed Angels, Dawson's Creek. I don't feel
Earth
like
to the Moon. That was a good
from
one.
The Earth to the Moon. That was a good one.
A long time ago,
I got a chance to work on that as well. That was my first one. That was my first big one.
Really?
Was From the Earth to the Moon.
That was a good one because Tom Hanks produced it and he took care of us. I mean, I felt extremely taken care of as an actor.
Right.
Yeah.
How has that for you? How has that been for you? Going from show to show to show to show to show. Have you ever had those where you're just like,
what?
You let me know when you need me, sort of thing. Where, I mean, I'm sure, obviously, you've probably been on every set that can be put together, any scenario where you've got them where they just welcome you with open arms and everything's great, or you've got the others where you kind of get the sense where they're just going, just sit over there. We'll let you know when we need you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and you're a very outgoing guy. And again, you're a very confident guy and you don't take a lot of shit from people. So I've always, you know, I'm curious how those situations have been for you where you've had those people that have been like...
You just roll with it. You know, I mean, you do, like I said, you don't take anything personally. And, you know, everybody, it can be the smoothest, most buddy-buddy set ever. Or it can be a ginormous clusterfuck and, you know, highly tensed and people are getting fired every day. And when I worked on, what was it called? It was... Consenting Adults.
Oh, okay? yeah, with Kevin Spacey?
Kevin Spacey's first lead role, Kevin Klein in there.
Right.
And Alan Pakula directed it.
Oh, yeah.
I've been really fortunate to work with great, like really A-list directors. I've been very fortunate as far as that goes. So Alan Pakula was director of that. And there was a night, I was on there for a while, and there was an evening where it was a night shoot. And we were in Charleston, and they were shooting at this mansion on this point near the bridge, and they had a helicopter camera, and they had a boat camera, you know, a boat offshore looking at the house, and then they had two other cameras aiming at the house, and it was just to open this scene. It was just the establishing shot to open the scene, right? And then the scene itself was very short. The front door, I'm a cop, I'm talking to Kevin Klein about something, and I'm walking away. And, we waited. It was a night shoot. So we got there at 5 o'clock. And, you know, 10 o'clock or 6 hours later, 11 o'clock, we had our fantastic lunch. You know, I mean, unbelievable catering,
right.
Staggering catering. Went back to our trailers about 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, they were ready. They had lit this thing, had practiced all the shots, had done all this stuff, were ready, 2 in the morning. Yeah, that's about right. Okay. And so they called us out of our trailer, and we go to set. Alan comes out of his trailer, and he looks around, and he's like, yeah. He goes, that's, he's looking at the setup, and he goes, that's nice. He goes, what if we could look at it from over here? Mm-hmm. He said, I think I'd rather do that. And, you know, he wanted to change the angle of the shots. Yeah. And the first AD was like, okay, everybody go back to your trailers, and we're probably going to let you go. Because to set up the next shot was going to run us into, you know, overtime.
Yep.
So they kind of nuked the day.
Holy shit. Okay.
And this is film. This is back when they shot film. So that was $1.5 million wasted that day.
Wow.
You know, like $1 million a day.
Yeah. Right?
Pretty much is what they count. Right. The next day, all the suits from Disney were there. The next day. I mean, there were like 6 of them. They looked like a bunch of Japanese tourists. They're all stuck together. They walked in a cluster. And you know, it became very tense on set.
Really?
Yeah. But... you know, we're a little removed from it, or we can be, you know, a little removed from that being actors. Mm-hmm. They're hashing it out and everybody's all tense and everything. And then when they turn to you, they're like, oh, it's so good you're back. You know, and then we're back and we're doing fine. So that never affected me. There have been some sets that have been tense.
Yeah.
But you just go, it's all momentary.
Sure.
You know, it's all momentary.
Sure.
And as long as I can get up and do my work, you know, it's not a thing.
And I'm sure that... being able to work as frequently as you have over the course of your career has helped with that. I mean, you just become more accustomed to it. I mean, for me, it tends to be, when you're on a run, it's just like, okay, you kind of feel like you get into a rhythm or a groove. But then when you have that stretch where you don't work for a while and you go back in and it's kind of like, whose clothes am I wearing?
Yeah.
Sort of thing again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I get, there's a little adjustment. That's why I like working all the time. If I can work all the time, you know, that's why I like working all the time. So you can avoid that.
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
So if I just work all the time.
That's all you have to do.
I'll never feel awkward again.
Well, I sold, my wife and I sold our house last summer of 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a big process in that. We didn't buy right away. Everything's in storage. We went to another house that we have on the coast to hang out for a while. So there was a time just because of all that was going on that I wasn't working.
Right.
And it got to be close to the holidays. And I was like, okay, I need to remember what this feels like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's when I got the act. That's when I got to work on the act.
Oh, okay.
And it was a great gift because I walked on set and it was with Margot Martindale, who is a character actress that you would recognize.
Yes, she's been in everything.
Right now she's the mom in Sneaky Pete. And,
right.
You know, she's in everything.
Right, right.
And Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
And it was just the three of us, you know, doing this stuff. And in a very short period of time, we discovered that we were all nominated for Screen Actors Guild Awards.
Right.
And we were going to see each other at the party in a couple of weeks.
That's amazing.
And it was incredible how the walls came down. Mm-hmm. You know, when you just met another actor and just kind of learn the paces, especially if it's somebody who's coming in who's not part of the regular cast.
Right.
I'm sure there's a little guardedness there, you know, and you're feeling them out and you're not quite sure how well they're going to do. And Well, all that went away. And we just started riffing on everything, playing. And to the point where the director was like, just do whatever you guys want to do. I mean, literally,
holy
she's
crap.
Like, it's so good. Just do what you want to do.
That's
so
amazing.
So that's the way that day went. And it was fantastic.
That's a fun day.
Yeah. And one of my most fun days in recent memory, actually. And it's
certainly.
Not, you know, it's nothing earth-shattering or anything.
Right.
But it was a really fun day. And it was a really good way to connect back with everything that happens on set. All the protocol that happens on set. All that stuff.
You know,
just when I'm away from it for a couple months.
Yep.
And it's like, all right, I need to feel that.
Yeah.
You know, right about like I am right now.
Yes.
Know, now's about that time.
Right. Have you felt through your career that, you know, when we do work, that because we're Southeast actors, that we kind of carry a stink with us when we get, like, do you ever feel like we've been looked at as, the expectation is,
Oh, yeah, it's a local actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on the show.
Yeah.
You know, and depends on the vibe you get from the people on the show.
Right.
You know, I mean, Ozark, Jason Bateman couldn't be any more inclusive than he is. So he's like, Kemi, we're part of this. You know, we're all part of this. We're all going to do this. The accountant was the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I was there from day one, table reading, talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Gavin O'Connor is probably one of my favorite directors ever.
Right.
The guy that directed The Accountant because he is so about what the actor is going through. And
right.
Just so available. And, yep. You know, it was just a joy to work in that kind of environment. So it's been very rare. I haven't, it's more from, there's occasions when like crew, you know, the pecking order seems to come through with crew more okay. than other actors
right.
to me, you know?
Right.
Like if you get a job on a show and you're in a honey wagon,
yeah.
you know, you're more cattle than
yeah,
the
exactly.
people in the big wagons,
exactly.
you know, that they'll take anything, they'll get anything for them, you know.
Right.
It's like, can I get a cup of coffee? And they're like, yeah, it's right over there, you know,
right.
as opposed to, let me get you something.
Sure.
You know, and here are some flowers in your wagon, you're right, you know.
Right.
And all that, which,
right.
and I've been able to experience both.
Yeah.
And so, keeps you humble.
Sure.
Keeps you humble. And, but you just have to know that, I mean, in my case, that you can swing the bat with anybody.
You Absolutely.
Know,
you know that.
Actor.
I know
what
that.
I do. And,
sure.
And it doesn't matter if you're from L.A., New York, or Timbuktu. If
right.
you can act,
right.
if you're confident in your craft and can communicate, then you get the buy-in from the other person.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't take very long. It yeah. doesn't take very long.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So,
because I've certainly been on a lot of shows where it's you know, it's been kind of two-sided to that, where I've gotten a lot of compliments where, you know, we start rolling and doing the takes and they kind of go, this guy's really good. And
yeah.
and while I appreciate that and that's very flattering, there's also the part of me that's like, why would you think I would
Yeah, yeah.
Be?
Like it's a surprise to
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he can do this.
And you live here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it. Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
lived in LA. I lived in New York. And what the hell difference? None of right. you are from LA or New York. You just happen to live there.
I know it. You're from Ohio.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so that's always been an interesting thing to deal with. The SAG Awards. This is huge. You have to know this. This is huge.
Yeah.
Rob Trevelyan, living in Charlotte, North Carolina, working out of our mutual talent agency for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
You were just nominated for a fucking SAG Award.
Yeah, it was nice.
Talk to the people who don't know you. Talk to yes. Tell everybody about that, Rob. How? I mean, shit. It's this close to being like miraculous.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. It was pretty neat. Well, I mean, I'm on a really good show. I'm on a really good show with a really good... It was an ensemble, you know, nomination.
Right.
And, you know, and I've always wanted to say that ensemble should include everybody. It should include the crew, as far as I'm
sure.
concerned. Because
yeah.
it doesn't happen. You know, once you start floating that word out, ensemble. It's
right.
like, well, it was these, you know, 12 people. It's like, yeah, but, you know, there were some characters that were more fundamentally... responsible for the storyline on the show than I was.
Yeah.
That didn't do six episodes.
Right.
So they didn't get nominated.
Right.
You know, they weren't part of it. But
right.
you know, they were much more part of the fabric of the show.
And yeah.
So it's you know, that gives you a perspective on it. But it's a high compliment. And
absolutely.
And the experience itself was fun.
Yeah.
You know, surreal. It's
yeah.
a little surreal. You know, when they sent a stylist, you know.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah, and I had a glam budget. You
Are
know,
you
they,
serious?
They dress you and stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
my
I use
God.
Most of that glam budget on my wife because I take 5 seconds, you know.
She looked fantastic.
Yeah, she looked great. And but, you know, the dressing part alone, I was on, you know, we Skyped this stylist in L.A.
Oh
that Netflix
God.
Got for me. And she was like, well, I said, I have a tux. I mean, I've got a tux. I got some nice clothes.
Nice.
She goes, well, you know, show them to me. So,
okay.
you know, I put everything on and she's just looking going, you don't have to bring any of that. I have everything for you. And I was like, okay. And then they dressed me in spectacular clothing.
Yes.
I mean, you know, crazy clothing
yeah.
because people want that to be seen. You
yeah.
know, and you learn that dynamic as well as far as going to those parties. And the fun part was, you know, right when we were getting on the red carpet,
mm-hmm.
it was silver carpet because it was 25th awards.
So oh,
silver
okay.
carpet.
Okay.
But like right when we're landing there, I'm waiting to go in and Kevin Pollak is standing there.
Right.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and
mm-hmm.
he's just standing there. We're all standing mm-hmm. there waiting to get herded, you know? And so I just stepped over and I was like, dude, I love your show. And he instantly was like, dude, I love your show. I'm addicted. I was like, you know what show I'm on? You know, like I'm not used to being recognized. Like, of
That's
course
crazy.
I do. Of course I do. And he goes, and what's your secret? And I was like, I don't know. Because they haven't told me what the secret is yet. They don't know what
right.
it is, you know, or they haven't figured that out.
Right.
But you know, that. And so it's an amazing validation. And then
right.
it was right after I'd worked on the act.
Yes.
Patricia Arquette, who won everything this past season
yeah.
for The Escape at Dannemora.
Right, right.
Comes walking up. So she had, and she was the lead runner for it that night as
mm-hmm.
well. She won.
Right, she did win.
That night.
Mm-hmm.
But she showed up. So she had a posse around her. She had a bunch of people around her, you know, interviewees and people and hangers on, whatever her group was. But she saw me. She goes, "Rob," and she, "Excuse me," and came right over.
So
I'm hugging Patricia Arquette. She walks away, and the other cast members in Ozark are like, "How do you know her?" I was like, "You know, we're buds. It's just Patty." So, you know, to go through that kind of stuff was really neat. You know, I stuck my foot in my mouth with Rami Malek.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because I didn't know who he was, and I haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody. Yeah. And he wore a tux to the awards that looked like his grandmother's couch. It was the most bizarre thing. But I didn't know who he was.
Okay.
But we were standing next to each other waiting to get a drink.
Yes.
Before the awards started.
Yes.
I mean, we're at the thing. And we're right next to each other. And I just touched the fabric. I was like, man. I was like, that is bold. And he goes... He's like, "Well, thank you." He goes, "Thank you." And I was like, "Oh, no, because you're pulling it off." I was like, "That's just a bold choice, brother." I was like, "I hope it works for you." And I walked away. And the next thing I knew, he's walking up to accept the award in that suit. I was like, "I wonder if I get a chance to talk to him later." I didn't.
You will not be in the Rami Malek story whenever it gets made. You will not
Maybe
be
I will be, though.
That's right.
He might bring me
in. You changed his life. All of a sudden, he went on this killing spree.
This fucking guy. Could you believe he said that?
Who the fuck is this guy?
You know how hard it was to find this tux?
Hey, Kevin Pollak recognized me. He knows who I am. I mean, with that going along with the theme of the show, you may have seen, like, again, with your body of work over the years, I'm sure you've gotten some recognition here and there, whether it be from neighbors or just random people in the grocery store. Yeah. But are you actually starting to get recognized more because the stuff that you're doing is more recognizable?
Yeah, I've done more high-profile stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it happens. It happens now.
Yeah.
You know, and
how does that feel?
It's, you know, you can't have the industry without fans. So, I mean, you know, you just are grateful and that's all it is, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice, you know. So I'll take pictures with people and stuff and it's neat. We went, this last time I was in LA, my wife and I got away for a weekend, went camping.
Yep.
So we're up in the Los Padres National Forest, a campground, middle of nowhere, met this young couple, you know, that, cause there weren't that many people staying there. And we're just yakking, you know, we just kind of ran into each other and we'd seen each other for a day or so.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, "So," he goes, "You're an actor and you're on Ozark." And I was like, "I am."
He goes, I
hesitated to say anything, but you know, now we've had a beer. And so, you know, is it okay that I'm saying that?
Really,
I was like,
cool.
"No, that's cool." So, you know, out in the woods in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Right. And it, you know, it didn't turn into a deliverance moment or anything. So that's good. You know, you're pretty.
Yeah.
Out in the woods.
And, you know, and there was that day that you and I were playing golf last year. That guy went nuts.
Oh, yeah.
When he realized. Yeah, he went apeshit.
Yeah.
And then he tried to buy your house.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, that guy, you know, it's interesting because they see you out of context.
Right.
So unless you are... We were at Trader Joe's in L.A. this past trip, and Charlize Theron walked out of Trader Joe's.
Yep.
And I was backing the car up and I'm getting ready to pull forward, and so I had to wait for her to cross in front of my car. And I said, "That's Charlize Theron."
Mm-hmm.
And my wife said, "No, it's not." And I said, "Yeah, it is." And she goes, "Why would she be at Trader Joe's?" I said, "I don't know, because she eats food.
Right?
And then she saw it and she goes, "Oh my gosh, it is. It's ours, you know? Yeah. So I think being seen out of context throws people to a degree.
Yeah.
And then when they connect the dots, it's, it's fun.
It's pretty crazy.
It is fun.
So did the SAG nomination and being there and being around all of that do anything to you in regards to how you're now perceiving where you are in your career and moving forward?
Oh yeah, I got a big fat head now. I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm kidding.
Right.
No, I
you do have a big fat head. No one can see you. Rob has a huge head.
No, I got a big head. Yeah, I got to get those small hats for me.
Right.
Can't hurt. It can't hurt.
Right.
It's always nice to get the recognition. I don't do it for the recognition.
Of course
never
not.
Have.
No,
I'm the worst person at self-promoting ever because, you know, I should have had, in retrospect, I discovered I should have had a publicist at that time.
Really? Wow.
You know?
Wow.
Because they, yeah. And so that world is new to me. That part of it is new. I can see the validity in it.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the benefit of it because... I'm not the social media guy, and somebody that can do that for you can literally be a bump. But I've never been that guy, so I still have to get more comfortable with that.
Yeah.
As far as self promotion goes.
Did you ever see that coming?
What's that?
Well, I mean, just like having to think about, oh my God, I should have had a publicist now.
Oh, yeah.
I should have,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Did you ever see that coming? When this start?
No.
Matlock.
Yeah.
Were you ever thinking that?
No.
Now?
Wow.
Now,
when I was a kid, I remember when it happened. I was a kid and I was watching, I might have been in high school, and I was watching something on TV, mm-hmm. and my only thought was, I can do it better than that guy.
Nice.
I know I can.
Nice.
I know I can. And and then I had to go through school and college and law and other jobs until I finally had the balls to go, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm doing. So I had all the training and everything, but I didn't actually start doing it until I was about 27.
And did it do anything? Like, did it affect Keisha as well? Like, being her as an agent, being at the SAG Awards and, you know, again, being there and watching you, has that changed things for her in some way as far as being an agent and running the agency?
I think it's good to have that perspective, you know, the larger global perspective. And her business is expanding. You know, she's got actors that she represents in L.A.
Yeah.
And that are good. And she is good at what she does.
Right.
And she's so personable. You know, the more people you meet, the more you realize what a gem she is.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I think it had quite the impact on her.
Right.
She wants to go again. So I have to do something else.
You have to try and stay alive.
That's right.
Hope that the show keeps doing well.
Yeah.
So then let's talk about that then. Let's talk about you and your career and the family.
Yeah.
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 How did all that work? How'd that go for you?
It's still going.
Right. Well, I mean, okay, so let's go back. You and I moved to Los Angeles together in 1999.
We followed each other in cars.
We caravaned out there.
We did. We did a road trip.
Yes. We were there at the same time. Now that, you left your wife and kid.
Oh, yeah.
On the other side of the country.
Yeah. Well, I had worked at the time. I'd worked enough on this side of the country that I had gotten some notice, you know, and I actually got a phone call from a manager in L.A.
Yep.
that was like, you need to come out here. You need to be out here, you know. And so I was like, why not?
Yeah.
You know, I felt good enough about it that I didn't want to go my whole career not knowing. You know, you got to try. You got to go.
Sure.
You got to see what it's like. You know, swim in every pool. Doesn't matter where it is. So that was when I went. You went as well.
Yeah.
And I had to leave my wife and my, I guess, four-year-old son. I think he was three or four.
Yeah, I was going to say, was he even that old? I wasn't sure.
Three or four. And I did this bi-coastal thing. Either I flew home every couple of weeks or I flew my wife out to California every couple few weeks with my son.
Wow.
I bought a big boat to live on. I bought a yacht to live on, which was actually a great living situation.
Right.
And so my son had his own cabin and we had our own space. We could take the boat out. That part was nice. But it was the most difficult test for our marriage, you know, that you can possibly voluntarily do, you know, because as tight as we are going back and forth doing this bi-coastal thing after 2 years, it almost broke us up. It was so close.
It was very close. I was going to ask you that because we never talked about that. And it's very, very personal, obviously, but I can't imagine.
Public knowledge at this point.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it really is. I've talked about it before.
I can't imagine that it wouldn't, you know, I mean.
And that's part of the learning curve. We didn't know either. It was like, you know, we love each other madly. We should try this. We should definitely try this.
Right.
But after being in LA for any length of time and being away from her, I would come back and it wasn't my house. It didn't feel like my house, you know, it felt like I had to integrate back into the family.
Yes.
You know, I was the one who had to integrate back in. And it's like, I bought this house, you know,
why
does this feel like this?
Right.
But, it really impacted our relationship. And then, but we came out of it, you know, we got through to the other side and our relationship is exponentially better. You know, it's just been a constant grade up, going up on a graph ever since then, you know, and we just had our 28th anniversary.
Congratulations.
The night before the SAG Awards was our 28th anniversary, right?
Right.
So
that's a pretty great anniversary.
It was great.
You're not going to be able to top that.
They put all the actors in the same hotel that are from out of town.
Yeah.
In it's right on the edge of Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And they put everybody's from out of town is there.
Yeah.
Right. So we're all in the same hotel. And they found out, you know, they know who's an actor and who's not. And they found out that our anniversary was that weekend. And they sent us more stuff. The hotel.
Oh, my God.
I mean, champagne and chocolates and things. And then the next day, it was the same thing. You know, here's some more. You still having a good weekend? Here's some more. You know, so we're hammered the whole time.
Right.
You know?
Right. Hammered and fat.
That was great. That was a lot of fun. But no, you know, in retrospect, it was, it's all good because we're still together and we're stronger than ever. And we both understand the industry through our longevity in it, you know, and both of our successes. And I don't think either of us take it so seriously, you know. If it, if there's ever a walk away point, I think we'll both know it from the business,
right?
Not from
right.
each other,
right?
Well, actually, from each other as well.
I would hope you would know.
That's kind of how we came out of there. It's like, now if we know next time, we're gonna know, and it's gonna be, there won't be any acrimony or anything like that. But we're solid,
yeah.
And there's, you know, I'm looking forward to the next 28 years,
absolutely,
with that little girl.
Because I mean, it's a tough gig, you know. We do this and we're committed to it, and we're like, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to have to drag me out of here kicking and screaming out of this business and whatever. And then when you do have a family and you're trying to truly make it work and you're in a position like you are where you're succeeding. You're succeeding on a fairly high level. Then, yeah, you've got to take some chances and you've got to take some risks and you've got to stick with it and you've got to see it through. And I'm sure it gets really fucking difficult.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now it's better for us now because our son is grown. He's out. He has a career. He's doing great.
Awesome.
You know, that is that is the most awesome.
Right.
So she's free to travel with me more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want. I want to be able to, you know, get some things. If I'm shooting somewhere for 3 months, I want to have her with me.
Yeah.
You know, she was able to come out to LA this last trip for a couple of months. She's got business out there now. So it was good for her. She was able to do work. I was able to reconnect with a lot of my friends out there and that family. And, you know, that's its own support structure as well, you know, which is good to have.
Yeah.
We're in a good place as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And the business isn't going to break us up anymore.
Right.
You know, the business is at a place where it keeps us together.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing.
And everything's so electronic now and remote. You know, it's not like she doesn't have to be in the office.
Right.
They didn't even really have an office anymore. So, I mean, she can take it with her. And there's no reason why you guys can't be anywhere together and still be... Yeah. respectively working.
It's amazing how many agents, you know, managers, casting directors they're electronic. They don't have an office. They work out of their homes they have a small office someplace, but they don't bring anybody to it, you know.
Did you have to make any conscious changes to the business as things were transitioning and changing into what it is now, into this whole digital electronic?
Well, yeah, it was different. I mean, we were used to, you know, in this market, in the Southeast market.
Yeah.
You'd get the call for an audition in Wilmington or Atlanta or Florida or you know, Washington, D.C. It didn't matter where it was. And you got in the car and you drove.
Yeah.
And then if you got a call back, you got in the car a week later and you drove to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, the good ones were where they had the call back the next day.
Right.
And you just go stay wherever. And then you only drive it once. But, man, I logged a lot of miles during those years, going back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
And once I got over... the fact that I wasn't going to be in the room with somebody. I like being in the room.
Yeah.
I like being in the room. And I will take that every time over an electronic thing because you get to meet the individual, you know, and they get to meet you. So it's kind of coming back around. The larger roles that I read for now, they're almost always in-person callbacks. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, and it should be that way
for
the larger roles.
I think
sure. I mean, because that's a big risk. That's a big roll of the dice for that.
Yeah. So once we got over that... you know, once the genie was out of the bottle, you know, and it was going to be that type of world where we're just putting ourselves on tape and sending it off through computers.
Right.
I was down with it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it, you know, because I do have the experience of being in the room. So that's my default setting. I can go back to that easily, a lot more easily than somebody who's never done that, you know, where if they get in the room, they're, you know, shitting little green apples because they've never had to be in front of a bunch of producers
sitting there,
you know.
I still feel like I got into it, I feel, I don't want to say too late, but on the back end of it here in North Carolina, that while I had my share of times in the room, I don't feel like I logged enough hours in the room to ever truly feel comfortable in there.
Well, it's a nerve-wracking thing. I mean, you know, you've got to find a way to, you know, it's like a golf swing under pressure.
Right.
You know, basically, you've got it. You just have to be able to execute it under any conditions.
Yeah.
You know? And I used to mess around. This is actually a good note for younger actors. I would think of the things that they might say to me that throw me.
Mm-hmm.
Like any kind of, you know, adjustment or a directorial thing that I might think is wildly wrong.
Right.
But I would go there. I would just say, okay, now what might they throw at me?
Yeah.
To see if they can throw me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think some people do that.
Right.
You know, they want to say, let's just see how he can think on his feet.
Okay.
You know, and it might not be appropriate in any way to the story or the script, but they just want to see.
Yep.
So I would go through that.
Hmm.
So when I got in the room and they would throw something at me, generally I'd already thought of it.
Wow.
And I'd be like, oh yeah, okay.
Wow.
You know, and I could do it. And it wouldn't, you know, wouldn't affect me.
Huh.
It wouldn't affect my nerves.
That's really cool.
So I would do that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I still do that.
Did you notice any kind of change in your batting average when things went electric, when electronic, as opposed to being in the room?
No. If I get in the room, my batting average is the same. It's very high.
Right.
If I get in the room, the electronic thing, you know, they're pulling it. There's 8 million submissions now for any particular role.
Right.
So I think anybody's batting average goes down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about over a period of 15 years,
20
years or so. So, you know, while my work is better, my craft is in better shape than it's ever been,
mm-hmm.
I think, you can read for a great role, but there was a thing I read for and it shoots in New York.
Yeah.
And it's a show that's based in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can do that. I'm good at that. But they wanted it to be hired out of New York if they could. They,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was a local hire. If they could do it. They said, the role is going to be local.
Yeah.
You know, it was a recurring guest star,
yep.
You know, like 10 out of 13. It was a great role.
Yep.
But it was going to be local, no matter where they cast it from, right? And I was reading out of L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I know they liked me.
You know,
I heard that. But
yep.
I knew when I read that they would probably cast it out of New York.
Sure.
Or Boston. I mean,
because
it's right there.
Right.
Why wouldn't you?
Right.
Why wouldn't you?
Right.
But they have the ability to reach as far as they need to.
Sure.
I think just by the nature of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's the numbers go down a little bit.
Yeah.
But the numbers should increase as well, because there's more content than there's ever been.
So it seems like now you are making one more big push for what? What's the
I want to, I like I said, I've been lucky enough to work at a high level in this market.
And let me preface by saying that it's not like you're taking one last swing, but I mean, you know. But I mean, you moved back from LA after having the success there that you did, and you've been working out of the Southeast. You're spending more time in LA. You've got a new manager now. So yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I'm swinging for the fences.
Well, yeah. I mean, I get those are your words, but you know.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah,
you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've done enough work and I'm confident enough in my work that I just want to have the opportunities to go ahead and be at that next level all the time.
Sure.
You know, which would be series regulars on stuff.
Yeah.
And generally in this market, we don't get that opportunity.
Yeah.
We just don't get the opportunity. By the time it comes here, mm-hmm. it's ancillary roles or satellite roles or supporting roles, you know.
Yep.
So getting that recurring guest star is you know, about the best you're going to get.
Sure.
And I've done that several times in this market. So I could stay here and continue to do that
because
I like to work.
Sure.
And I like to live in the South.
Sure.
Or I could go ahead and test those other waters and try to do that because I just feel like it's a great time for me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then having sold our house and our son's out and all that, just the timing seems right.
Right.
So, yeah. So we'll be going back and forth. We're going to be doing that.
Yep.
And see what happens. Everybody says, are you going to move to LA? And I was like, not if I don't have to. I'll go work there.
Right.
I'll live there while I'm working there.
Anytime they want.
I mean, it's fun.
Sure.
It's fun. But, you know, I like living here. It's an all-in city. I mean, that's
for sure.
The difference between LA and this market. It is an all-in city as far as the industry goes.
Right.
You know, it's all-consuming and you can... It can consume you out there.
Sure.
I'm in a better place now where it's not going to.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a way to insulate myself from that. And,
right. Well, you don't need it.
And you don't need it. But you have to come to that point.
Sure.
You know, you have to get to that point where, I mean, a lot of people are fed by it, just by the nature
of
it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are fed by that.
Yeah.
But it'll wind up eating you from the inside out, I think. I like my perspective on the business now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met a lot of great people, you know, in recent years, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, man, you have been a huge inspiration to me for the past 20 plus years. You've been a really great friend. I love working with you. I love you.
Yeah, man.
And you know that I'm rooting for you. I'm in your corner. I'm probably going to have to bring you back because you know that there's going to be more new stuff to talk about, which
That'd be fun. I'm looking forward to.
You're probably going to be my first repeat guest.
Oh, man, I really appreciate you having me. I think this is a great thing.
Thanks,
and,
man.
And I want you to get yours, too, brother.
Thank you.
We got to work some more together.
We do. We're going to talk about that. So this has been Rob Trevelyan, and this is You May Have Seen. Thanks so much for listening. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.